So believe it or not, we are near the end of Esther. We finish today. And we've been on a journey. I mean, this has been a big journey. And if you're visiting with us today, we had visitors at first service this morning. I said, you know, we've been through so much that if anything I say this morning kind of perks your interest, catch up online because I can't kind of recap all the nuances of the past 4 weeks. But here's where we have been in a nutshell. Is first of all, we know that King Xerxes of Persia had some marital problems and he decides to find a new wife by having a beauty contest. Well, out of that beauty contest, he finds Esther, who becomes his queen. She is Jewish, but she hides her ethnicity from everyone. During that same time, one of his nobles, Haman the Agagite, also Haman the Amalekite, convinces the king to kill a bunch of people without telling him who this group of people is. He just said, there's a group of seditious people. We should get rid of them. The king says, okay. But because Haman had an axe to grind, being the Amalekite, there were the Jewish people. Now, once again, way too much for me to get into to explain that, but it is in the previous sermons. At that point, Esther, through the encouragement of her cousin Mordecai, who raised her, risks her life to save herself and the people. Once again, I cover that earlier in previous sermons. And she does this by having a dinner party where Esther reveals her Jewish identity and Haman is put to death. I mean, that's kind of a tough story. Not only does that catch up with him, but his sons who are part of the plan and kind of the mob that he had recruited, almost like an army, had recruited to take care of this Jewish problem that he had this axe to grind unfairly. And so in just kind of one fell swoop, the danger that was presented to Esther and Mordecai by Haman the Agagite is taken care of by the king undoing all these decrees. Now, I don't mean to be critical at all, but this is definitely not a New Testament ending to this story. This is much more like the book of Joshua. And if you're not familiar, the book of Joshua is all about how the people of Israel come into the land and they take the land by force. And yes, it is kind of a happy ending for the Jewish folks, but not so much for the people living in Canaan at the time. But this is how this resolves. And any way you look at it, this is a story of hope for the Jewish people. Now, let me back that up a little bit by saying, imagine this, being the chosen people, God's chosen people, and for the last 4,000 years, yes, the last 4,000 years since Abraham, the patriarch, someone or some group of people have been harassing God's chosen people for the past 4,000 years at any one time in history. So this story brings hope and joy, not so much as in the, oh, I get revenge upon our enemies kind of way, but more like we are saved and the dangerous people are now gone. Now there's an ancient or an old painting of folks celebrating this story of Esther from many years ago. And when I was online shopping for Purim gifts, I found a Purim punching bag with Haman on it. And I thought, now that's some fancy, yeah, if you're feeling down, you just give good old Haman a punch, right? So, and I like at the bottom it says Happy Purim, right? You know, wow. Okay, so moving on. But here's the thing. As I was talking with the kids, celebrating a victory is not unique to the Jewish people. I mean, even we in our nation love stories of victory. I mean, every year, what do we celebrate? We celebrate the 4th of July, Independence Day. It's a victory. We're free. And it wasn't too long ago that we were still remembering not only VE Day, but VJ Day, victory over Europe and victory over Japan, because those are moments of triumph. People like to celebrate when things get resolved. And honestly, sometimes when things aren't going well in your life, it's good to have a reason to celebrate. When you're struggling with something or you're in grief, it's good to be reminded that God is with us. So we come to Easter in a couple of weeks and we will celebrate that Christ is risen. And maybe a lot of us, and some of us won't be in a mood to celebrate, but it is a good reminder to us that when things don't go well, God is there. And I think for that very reason, that out of the story of Esther comes the celebration of Purim. Matter of fact, Purim was just celebrated a few weeks ago. It is an annual celebration. It's a minor holiday. But it is a time to celebrate and to feel good. I mean, that really is the primary part of Purim, is to have fun. The name itself is Hebrew for the casting of lots, or rolling the dice, when Haman rolled the dice to set the date for the extermination of the Jews in that region, right? So now these folks celebrate this year in and year out, not so much for we got revenge, but to say God saved us. Now, some things about Purim that I would like you to know and to think about is, first of all, the Hebrew word for scroll is the word Megillah. And so on the festival of Purim, it is customary not to read sections like we just did, like we did a little bit here and a little bit there, and over a course of 5 weeks, we kind of get through most of the book. In Purim, they read the whole scroll in one setting, so you hear the whole story. And so the line, the whole Megillah, comes from the line, they read the whole Megillah of Esther at the time. I know we don't use that phrase much anymore, but it used to be a common phrase. But it comes from the reading of Esther. Now, when you think about Purim, it sounds like it'd probably be a lot of fun to go to a Purim celebration for a number of reasons. One is you get to listen to the public reading of the entire scroll of Esther, and it is rowdy, and it is ruckus, and people are wearing masks, and they're making noise through the entire reading. I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun. Not only that, but they send food and gifts to friends. They have an emphasis on charity to the poor and also eating a very festive meal. Matter of fact, there's even permission from rabbis, a tacit permission to even consume several strong beverages during the reading of Esther. Matter of fact, a friend showed me an ad in a newspaper when I was back in Chicago, where during Purim, someone was advertising an Esther party where the story is read and martinis were served. So, wow, huh? Yeah, right? So it is meant to have a lot of fun and enjoy. Not only that, but there's noisemakers too. So it's not just being rowdy, but noisemakers during the reading of Esther, because when it is read, Haman's name is said 54 times. And whenever his name is said, people boo and they hiss and they stamp their feet and they use those rattles. So if I was reading the book of Esther and I said, then Haman the Agagite. Thank you. That's right. Just like that. And that actually goes all the way back to the 13th century. Because in Scripture, the rabbis interpreted a line from Deuteronomy 25 that says, thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek, or the Amalekites. And so what they did was they took rocks and they wrote Haman's name on it, and they would clap them together until his name was no longer written on those rocks. So that's where they started making noise. And then some people, instead of having rocks, they would write Haman's name on the bottom of their shoe, and then they would stamp. And then somebody said, well, that's too much work. They came up with a rattle, you know, one of those spinning rattles that go. Well, the rabbi said, that's way too much noise. And they said, you can't do that. And the rabbis lost. Pretty much there's rattles in every Purim celebration anywhere you go. But then what about the masks? So you have the rattles. What about the mask? Because the story of Esther is all about hidden or mistaken identity. Esther hid the fact that she was Jewish. Mordecai hid the fact that he knew various languages. At the very first chapter, he discovered a plot by two guards who were openly planning to kill the king, and he knew their language, but he didn't let that be known. Not only that, but Esther, her real name is Hadassah. Her Jewish name is Hadassah, yet she goes by her Persian name, Esther, or Ishtar. Now, so when they would get together and celebrate Purim, people would wear masks. Now, I don't have masks. The closest thing I have to mistaken identity is my really cool sunglasses, and my wife is shaking her head because she says that these are not fashionable. Not only are they fashionable, they got like side viewers, and I see everything in gold. And it's like mistaken identity, because people would think by me wearing these that I just had cataract surgery. So like, who is that up there? And so I need a final determination from the rest of you. I've heard from my wife. So I need to know, either with a thumbs up or a thumbs down, are these a good pair of sunglasses? So let's vote. So either thumbs up or thumbs down. Let me see. So, man. Well. So, yeah, thank you, Jack. So, it was about 50-50 at first service, but I got more thumbs up than thumbs down. So, I think they're here to stay, baby. What do you think, you know? Every day is Purim at our house, right? You know, I could be wearing these. Anyways. When you talk about mistaken identity, masks, and hiding, it also plays into the question that I've been asking throughout these past 5 weeks. Where is God in all of this? Is God nowhere or now here? And maybe you heard me allude to it, but nowhere in the book of Esther is God mentioned. The only other book of the Bible that has no mention of God is Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs. And so you might say, well, this is a secular story, that this is just a good, you know, turn of luck for Esther and Mordecai. But if you're a person of faith, you're more apt to say God is now here than God is nowhere. And isn't that how God often works in our lives, that God is often working behind the scenes, and it takes our faith in God to see that God's up to something? That there are circumstances where we would say, well, God definitely had a hand in that, but somebody else would say, well, that's just luck, or that's just coincidence, or that's just random. Well, to be honest, we don't believe in luck. We don't believe in coincidence. I actually like what Albert Einstein said about this very situation. He said that coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous, and that it takes faith, takes trust, to see that God is at work. And that's what God calls us to. So how we interpret this story, how we even interpret our lives, is all about perspective. Is it just a secular story? Or is God at work behind the scenes, helping Esther and Mordecai? And then we can extend that out to say, what about you and your life? Is your life just a random series of chance encounters with people? Or is God working behind the scenes and moving you somewhere? I choose that God is now here, working in our lives. And so the Jewish people celebrate Purim as a reminder of God is at work behind the scenes. I mean, we like to celebrate. And when we celebrate, we like to celebrate something good, like a win. And if there's a win, well, then there's got to be a loser. In some cases, there's even an enemy. There's like good guys and bad guys. By the way, those two bird-looking guys are Spy versus Spy from Mad Magazine. And I never knew which one I should root for, because they kind of were both the same. So, but in life, To celebrate a win sometimes means somebody isn't winning. You know, what do you do that even at the earliest age in grade school and in junior high and high school, who's got the best grade? What's your ranking? What's your SAT score? Where do I fit? Am I at the top of the class? Am I in the middle? Where's my spot? Am I smarter than you? It becomes competition. And how do we feel about competition and having an adversary? Well, we don't like them very much if someone did better than we did. I mean, even in the past month, for so those of you who are here, how did you feel about the antagonist of the story, King Xerxes and Haman the Agagite? Exactly. We weren't cheering for them. We didn't fall in love with them. We were rooting for Esther and Mordecai in this story. We want the good guys to win. I mean, isn't that why we go see movies too? We want to see the good guys win, or we want to have a happy ending. We want good to prevail. Matter of fact, we want justice served as an entree with a side of punishment for the bad people. But then Jesus comes along, right? Jesus comes along and turns this whole thing on its head when he reminds us in the Sermon on the Mount to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Not only does he say that, but he invites us to be a part of that too. And I've read this passage, I couldn't even tell you how many times, and I'm sure you've heard it preached from this pulpit hundreds of times. And yet this week, when thinking about the story of Esther, this struck me in a new way that I'd never thought about before, and it's this. Jesus doesn't see anyone as an enemy, and neither should we. It's not about, I'm going to love my enemy, but I still hate them on the inside. Jesus does not view anyone as an enemy. He doesn't just say, be nice to the people you hate. It's so much bigger than that. As far as he is concerned, he has no enemies. And he invites us into that same place. Now, let's be clear. There are people who hate Jesus. And they viewed him as an adversary. He forgave the men who crucified him. You know, I mean, that's huge. He didn't see them as the enemy. Misguided, maybe, but not the enemy. He had people who opposed him, who disagreed with him, to try to stop him, even kill him, but he didn't try to defeat them. He didn't try to take revenge. He didn't try to punish them. He forgave them. Not to treat them like enemies. So Jesus invites us not to view the world through the lens of good guys and bad guys. But that's hard. I mean, that doesn't mean turning a blind eye to injustice, but it certainly means trying to view everybody through the lens of being a friend and not a foe. And to pray for those who want to do harm to the world and to you. Now you go, well, what does this have to do with the story of Esther? Which I told you last week is essentially about four people. King Xerxes, Haman, Queen Esther, and Mordecai. What does that have to do with these four characters? Well, the deal is we are those four characters. Not one of them. We are all four of them. Sometimes we're like King Xerxes. We're self-absorbed. We want what we want. We want it now. We're oblivious to the things going around because we're just concerned about number one. Sometimes we're like Haman, where we have a grudge and we're angry at someone, and we will whisper into anyone's ear about our discontent about something or someone until someone listens to us. And sometimes we're like Esther, right? That at the beginning, we just want to keep our head down and not rock the boat, but later on, that we aspire to make a difference, that we're willing to risk even our reputation for the sake of others. And sometimes we're the silent person behind the scenes, encouraging others and not neglecting to do the right thing when the time comes. We're not just one of them. We don't pick one of them and say, that's what I'm going to be. All of those things are going on inside of us at any one time. And when we can start to see that there is that possibility in the person that we don't like, maybe we can change our attitude towards them. That we don't have to treat them like an enemy, even if they'll never be nice to us. We all have the capacity to do good things. And we also have this great capacity to do really mean things. That's what Martin Luther calls being simultaneously saint and sinner. It's not just one or the other, it's both all the time. So when we can see that, we have the possibility of seeing Esther in someone. We have the possibility of seeing Mordecai in someone. And maybe that's just the part of them we can love. But that's the beginning. That was the insight that came to me. That we have a choice of how, not only do we see others, but how do we choose what's going to take a dominant role in our lives. So we come to the end of Esther. We've covered the whole Megillah. I hope you learned a little bit. I hope I've inspired you along the way. But now it's time that we turn our eyes towards Jerusalem, because the Savior is on his way, and next Sunday we will meet him there. Amen.